I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Alter. Nativity. Stories.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan, and in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to Alternativity Stories, a month-long look at alternative stories set around the most wonderful time of the year. Shabbat Shalom and Mazel Tov to everyone of the Jewish faith who have been celebrating the Festival of Lights. And as today is the last day of Hanukkah, I wanted to celebrate Jewish comic book talent, their impact on superhero comics as a whole, and characters who are born Jewish and or practice Judaism specifically. The comic book industry without Jewish creators, there simply would be no superheroes, no comic book industry. Many creators in the Golden Age of comics were first generation children of Jewish immigrants, most notably Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, Joe Simon, Jack Kirby, and Stan Lee, who sadly, due to the anti-Semitism at the time, struggled to get work in various other sectors of employment, but found a home creatively at these publishing houses such as Marvel Comics and DC, or as they would become known famously. So from 1939 into the 1980s, the majority of comics and characters were created by Jewish creators. Name a character, almost all have a Jewish creator behind them, be it editor, publisher, so on. There is so much Jewish talent behind every single character. And often elements of the Jewish culture would find themselves into many of the stories and or characters, either actively or on a subconscious level. For example, Superman is a modern sci-fi retelling of the story of Moses. Simply without Jewish creators, we wouldn't be getting Snyder Cuts and Avengers Endgames. So we owe all these creators a huge debt of gratitude. So before we get started on our top five Jewish superheroes, I just wanted to give a shout out to a couple of YouTube series that helped me kind of do the research for the podcast itself, this particular podcast. So first off, I'd like to recommend Heroes Like Us. It's a YouTube series celebrating superheroes from all walks of life and all diversities, be it sexual identity, military service, religion, nationality, etc., etc. And I highly recommend the channel Comic Tropes as well. It's a great kind of in-depth look in comics, the history, the creators behind them, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly. And they do several episodes. He does several episodes on Jewish culture, characters, and creators, such as how Jack Kirby's faith influenced his work, and why there's a lack of Jewish superheroes, and the rarity of kind of Hanukkah holiday special comics when there's so many kind of Christmas ones. Why is there so little? So it's quite interesting to kind of see that as well. If you want a more kind of comprehensive list of what every character's, you know, religion is, you can go on comicreligion.com. So they'll provide a list of kind of every denomination that every character is under and group them together as well. If you want to look up like Muslim superheroes, you can, or Christian superheroes, Catholic, Protestant, you name it, you can look them all up and kind of what they celebrate and what kind of cultures they come from. So, yeah. So in this list, I'm only going to be including characters who have been explicitly referenced at least once as being Jewish within their comic book universe. So characters with Jewish characteristics such as Superman or Spider-Man, will not be included, even though they did have Jewish creators. And again, you know, you could argue maybe Spider-Man and Superman are Jewish, but it's never been kind of explicitly said within the comic book universe. So I'm going to avoid those. So number one on the top five, and this is Sabra from kind of Marvel Comics and the X-Men universe. So Ruth Bat-Seraph was an Israeli-born mutant, and she was quickly recruited and trained to join the Israeli police force and subsequently Mossad, and has often been a spokesperson for superhuman affairs, that anything that affects the nation directly, Israel directly. In her first appearance, Bruce Banner finds himself in Israel, and a small boy befriends him because he's homeless, doesn't have any money. But subsequently, the boy dies in an explosion caused by terrorists, and the grief and anger causes Bruce Banner to transform into the Hulk. Sabra jumps into the fray, believing that the Hulk is the reason for the death and the destruction, and begins to fight and holds her own against the Hulk, you know, quite surprisingly. And this was her very first appearance, but eventually she realizes her mistake and kind of helps the Hulk to grieve. It's quite a tragic kind of issue, but I do recommend looking that up. It's a really good, really strong first appearance for the character. So Sabra's personality, she can often come across as quite cold and pragmatic, and her code name is even taken from a prickly pear found in Israel. And these personality traits only became kind of strengthened when she actually lost her own child to a terror attack as well. So she tends to deal with a lot of things that are kind of terror related, or any kind of threats, or you know, any national emergency, she's usually kind of pulled up for. Her mutant abilities are kind of the standard kind of superhero stuff. So you've got the enhanced speed, strength, stamina, but she's also equipped with an anti-gravity cape, which gives her the ability to fly, and she's got these kind of wrist gauntlets that fire kind of these trademark quills that she has, kind of razor sharp quills, and it can also produce energy blasts as well. I really like Sabra. She's a really unique and interesting character, and I don't think she gets used enough. She's very underused and underutilized as a character. She does turn up a lot in the kind of X-Men books, being a mutant. She did turn up in Operation Zero Tolerance. I talked about that in the top five Sentinel comics. That was really, really good. Really good story, and she plays a very kind of key role in that. But that's probably the only time she really turns up, for the most part, is like the odd. It'd be nice to see her in her own miniseries, I think. But she just turns up in the big crossovers like Secret Invasion or Contest of the Champions, things like that. So I really wish we'd see a bit more of her and like her abilities, or, you know, maybe she's doing some anti-terror stuff, or maybe, you know, maybe she joins the X-Men as a kind of, I don't know, ambassador from Israel or something. That would be interesting to see. But I think that's the problem with a lot of international characters, because the main Marvel universe is very New York and American. It's very hard for these kind of international ones to have, you know, have a decent reason to come over to America, or for other characters to go over there and have their adventures there. It's quite a difficult thing, I think, for writers to kind of convince them to kind of break away for a little bit. She's a really cool character, and I highly recommend kind of checking out any of her first appearances or subsequent appearances. It's really cool, and it's really interesting when she turns up and brings a lot to the stories. Next up is Atom Smasher from DC Comics. Albert Rothstein inherited his abilities from his grandfather, the supervillain known as Cyclotron. And he was a villain of the original Atom, Al Pratt, who's kind of a short guy, developed kind of some superpowers along the way. And he was also Rothstein's godfather, and would become the inspiration for Rothstein himself to become a superhero. So Albert began his career as Nuklon in the team Infinity Inc., which featured mostly the kind of the children, younger relatives, and other associatives of the Justice Society of America. He'd later fulfill this dream and become a fully fledged member of the JSA as Atom Smasher. He's quite a kind of a gentle giant of a character. He's kind of sensitive. You know, he's been known to kind of be insecure and unsure of himself or indecisive, which obviously can affect his, you know, his personal life. And sometimes even on missions, it can kind of mess with his kind of judgment of situations. And I think because of that, he's often kind of been led by kind of down dark paths by villains. So like Cobra, for example, the leader of the cult, Cobra, that's with a K, because it's cooler. It's cooler with a K. he's one of my favorite kind of DC villains because he's just pure evil. Yeah, he killed Rothstein's mother. And then Black Adam as well, who's kind of an anti-hero. He's kind of was led to kind of follow him for a bit. But when it comes to the JSA, and Al Pratt's kind of legacy as the Atom, Rothstein's always kind of steadfast and reliable, and a good friend to everybody within the JSA and in the larger superhero community as well. There's a character called Damage, I believe, who's a bit more directly related to Al Pratt, and he kind of plays kind of a big brother role to him because he's a little bit more kind of angry and kind of a bit more easily misled or troubled than Atom Smasher is. But Atom Smasher is quite a popular character. He's appeared in lots of different media. So in the Flash TV show, he was played by the wrestler Edge from the WWE. He's been in Justice League Unlimited, Injustice, Gods Among Us. You can see him in the background, I think, of the Hall of Justice stage, and he's fighting Giganta, because they're two kind of characters that can change to massive sizes. So I think in the comics they have a kind of troubled relationship as well. But yeah, that's another story for another time. Okay, number three is Songbird from the Thunderbolts and Marvel Comics. Melissa Gold, so she started off as a kind of a troubled runaway, and she joined a group of female wrestlers known as the Grapplers to kind of help support herself. But then the wrestling company refused to pay them as much as their male counterparts, which is probably still, sadly, the case with a lot of things like that. But this is quite a little ahead of its time, back in the kind of early, mid-80s, I think. So they decided to turn to crime to, you know, why not? She was given this ability to emit a sonic scream after treatments by somebody called the Power Broker. And she took the name Screaming Mimi as her name. So that became her kind of supervillain name. She was recruited into the Masters of Evil by Baron Zemo. This iteration of the Masters was so powerful, they defeated the Avengers and even put Hercules into a coma in one of my favorite storylines, Avengers Under Siege. Probably my favorite, I think, Avengers storyline. So definitely check that one out. And they captured the mansion and held the mansion hostage and several of the Avengers. So they were quite victorious in their mission. But yeah, but obviously doesn't last. but not long after that, she had a relationship with the criminal Angar the Screamer, who was then shot dead by a guard, sadly. And this led to Melissa just screaming out and destroying her vocal cords and her powers just out of pure grief, because she loved Angar the Screamer. He's kind of like a hippie and has psychedelic screaming powers. It's a strange character. Steve Gerber character, so it's bound to be a little bit weird. Yeah, so after that, Zemo appeared to her and asked her to join the Masters once again. And with nowhere to go and with her powers not working and being a criminal at large, she agreed. And Zemo developed a new kind of system, part of armor kind of collar, which helped her not only enhance her powers, but enabled her to create solid constructs out of sound. So not unlike the Fantastic Four villain Claw, who can create solid kind of sound constructs. She's given similar powers and allows her to fly, create wings, and gives her those abilities. And she renames herself Songbird. The plan of Zemo was to actually just full on attack the Avengers again, with his, you know, more powered up Masters of Evil, but it was soon discovered that the Avengers and the Fantastic Four had seemingly died while battling Onslaught. So what he did is he changed tact and decided that they would impersonate new heroes and basically wait for the government to give them access to all these various resources that would help them take over the world. So yeah, and it's one of my favorite comic book series of all time, the original Thunderbolts and the subsequent series. It's always good. I always like, you know, I'm a big fan of the Suicide Squad as well, so I like when villains are, you know, on the forefront and then the main characters. They always make really interesting protagonists, you know, the supervillains in a team trying to fight for good. I always kind of like that sort of thing, or taking out the more evil villains. But yeah, so they decide to kind of dupe the government and all these other kind of, because they even get the Baxter Building, that's their new base, and they get access to government files and all that sort of stuff, technology, you name it, they get it all. But Songbird and several other of the Thunderbolts, even pretty much the entire team for the most part, realize that they actually like being heroes, and they don't want that to end. So they betray Zemo and help the Avengers save the world that he was trying to... He had like 98% of the world mind-controlled. So they stopped that evil plan. And then they were forced to go kind of on the lam, outlaw heroes, much like the X-Men. And they were protecting the world while also searching for some form of redemption. Songbird has had many, many ups and downs throughout her entire career and has been in almost every single iteration of the Thunderbolts, treading that fine line between hero and villain, all the while still remaining one of the most powerful and dedicated and relatable members of that team. So that's Songbird, another amazing, amazing character. Check her out. Okay, next up is Ragman. So in the 16th century, the Jewish community created the Ragman to protect them from various forms of evil after their last protector went rogue. So the entity known as the Golem from Jewish folklore, you're probably quite familiar with that. And the suit is kind of almost like a patchwork, kind of almost like a patchy jigsaw type suit, and every patch represents a soul of a guilty party, and they have been, you know, taken care of or absorbed by the suit because they're an evil person. This suit is so powerful that the Jewish community have to give it to someone who can rein in its destructive nature, because it will not, unlike the Golem, go rogue and start just killing everybody and doing whatever it wants. So they give it to a certain person who's strong enough to prevent them themselves from being kind of abused by that power and the abilities, because the suit itself is very, very powerful. So they give it to Jerry Reagan during the kind of 30s, 40s, but he was unable to save anyone during the destruction of the Warsaw Ghetto in 1943, because the one weakness the Jewish community put into the suit was fire. So it would, the suit actually carried him away before he could save anybody. Tragically, it was his one weakness. But when he, obviously years later, he has a son, moves to America, runs a business, kind of a ragman type business, Rags and Tatters, I believe the shop's called. So his son, Rory Reagan, who's a Vietnam vet, is actually bequeathed the suit of souls, as it's known, to fight crime in the suburb of Gotham that they live in and avenge his father's death from criminals who are attempting to gentrify the area. So Ragman, the characters and stories of Ragman are steeped in Jewish culture, and seeing Rory deal with his Nam Vietnam experiences as PTSD makes for a really fascinating read. So I do recommend trying to get hold of that miniseries, the post-crisis miniseries. I'm going to say it's early 90s, like 92, I think. So the rags themselves are alive, and the living rags give the wearer such kind of use of their skills. So any evil person that's been absorbed, they can have their memories and skills, but also it will boost any physical attributes, so you're stronger, faster, you know, it can make you fly, it gives you psychic powers, teleportation, you can transform into things. Arguably, probably the most powerful character on this list as well. Kind of spooky, almost a bit like almost Spawn-like character with a kind of living suit. But really fascinating character, fascinating read. And he proved himself very proficient with generally just kind of sorcery, not just the abilities within the suit, but outside of that as well. And his sorcery abilities kind of put him in top tier of sorcerers within the DC universe, so much so that he joined the Sentinels of Magic and then later the Shadow Pact, two kind of magical and fantastical teams to help protect the DC universe from the evils of magic. Probably one of the characters that I've got to know more recently, but really have enjoyed his stories, so definitely check him out. Okay, number one, here we go. So it's Gertrude Yorks from The Runaways from Marvel Comics. She is possibly the wokest character on the list, absolutely. And also the wokest daughter of supervillains you'll ever find. So Gert and her friends in The Runaways, they see their supervillain parents sacrifice a teenage runaway. Realizing their parents are supervillains, they follow in the runaway's footsteps and become the runaways. Gert's parents particularly were time travelers, and they commissioned for her a velociraptor with an empathic link. She named the dinosaur Old Lace and took up the codename Arsenic, which all the runaways kind of later dropped their kind of code names. But this is referencing, of course, the Frank Capra movie. Gert is a really kind of definitely a modern character. She's cynical, sarcastic teen, while also being a really outspoken liberal social activist. She is somewhat insecure about her weight and not being what she considers conventionally beautiful. She somewhat overcame these issues when she became involved with Chase, another member of the Runaways, in a relationship. But yeah, it's still in the back of her mind. Still, you know, it's one of her kind of character flaws or characteristics, if you will. The Runaways went on to encounter a time-traveling Gert known as Heroine, who in the future is the leader of the Avengers. She comes back to the past to warn the team of a hero called Victorious, who betrayed all the heroes and killed them in the future. This future version of Gert dies in Chase's arms and professes her love for him as she dies, which is very, very tragic, but not the only tragic moment in Gert's history. The present Gert would actually go on to sacrifice herself as well in a very similar scene. However, don't worry, she came back to life, as is comics. And she was really sad. Obviously, it's been quite a few years since she died, and she comes back as the same age, but all the characters have aged on and become adults almost. But she sees the world and sees how cruel it's grown and how horrific it's become. And she is, you know, she's the key to bringing them all back together and reuniting the runaways to fight for kind of young people and, you know, everybody, the world. Yeah, so that's my top five Jewish superheroes. Hope you guys have enjoyed that. I've got a few honorable mentions before I go, because there's so many characters I could have picked, so many great, amazing characters. And there's even some surprises. There's a lot of characters out there you probably wouldn't realize were Jewish, but in fact, they are within canon or within, you know, that particular universe. So let's go through some of the biggest names. So you've got The Flash, Barry Allen, who is Jewish. You've got Green Lantern, Hal Jordan as well. Moon Knight, Harley Quinn. Night Owl from The Watchmen. Batwoman, the Kate Kane version of Batwoman. Iceman, The Thing. Firestorm, so that's one of two people. So I'm talking about Martin Stein, the older scientist gentleman of the combination of Firestorm. Dr. Manhattan, again, from The Watchmen. Kitty Pryde of the X-Men. Magneto and all of his family. So Polaris, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch. You've got Wiccan of the Young Avengers as well. Sandman, Wesley Dodds from the Justice Society of America. Colossal Boy from the Legion of Superheroes. Speaking of legions, we've got Legion from X-Men, the son of Charles Xavier. The Atom, Ray Palmer, is also Jewish. Justice Marvel Boy, or Vance Astrovic, however you want to call him, also a Jewish character. Sasquatch, or Walter Langowski, he is Jewish as well. And the last one on the list, the last superhero, is Doc Samson, or Leonard Samson, is also a Jewish character. So there's quite a few there, and those are the kind of the bigger names, I think. There's a few more, but I just wanted to get the main kind of big ones out there to kind of celebrate Hanukkah for everybody. But yeah, this has been really good. I'm really enjoyed talking about all these kind of characters and the larger kind of universe that they are in, and the kind of to celebrate, you know, Jewish culture. It's not something, you know, that's celebrated, I don't think, as much as it probably should be. But yeah, it's been really fun. And again, we wouldn't have these amazing characters without the Jewish community and Jewish writers, editors. So you can find me on Facebook at Secret Boars. Twitter, it's at Dan_Boars. Instagram, Spider Dan Secret Boars. And the podcast is available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, many, many more. And if you'd like to donate towards the podcast, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/SpiderDan and the Secret Boars. And when you interact with us, don't forget to use the hashtag Prepare for Prattle. And just before I go, I'd like to say happy Hanukkah and happy holidays to all other faiths and denominations and non-believers and to people like me who sit on the fence. However you are celebrating this year, make it a good one, guys, because I think we really need to make it a good one. Let's polish off this year with the best possible goodwill to all men and women and everybody else. So I'll say goodbye there. And again, once again, happy Hanukkah to everybody. Bye-bye.